You're listening to Circle of Hope Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 3800 Marlton Pike. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. or 7 o'clock p.m.
One of the most famous verses in the Bible is Romans 5:8. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Some people hear that and they really like to focus on the sinner part, rather than the for us part. I say, of course we're sinners. I think everyone knows that, really, and they don't need to hear it too often. But someone told them at some point that they shouldn't be, or someone told them that they weren't, and they pretended that they weren't sinners, and then now we have a problem about it. We have a problem with this verse, with how people have kind of hit people over the head with it. It's all about you being a sinner now, and that's like what God is about. We're in trouble. In the Bible, the religious people come at Jesus this way quite often, and Jesus would just much rather hang out with the people who aren't having this problem. And the people who are like, yeah, I'm totally messed up. Please come help me. Those are the people that Jesus hangs out with. And we can be those kind of people. And in Circle of Hope, we're trying to be those kind of people because we kind of look at our whole life and say, yeah, we're kind of all recovering from the sin addiction. We look at it, even if it's not like rearing its ugly head in a real bad way today, we know that we're susceptible to that. We know we've been there. And Jesus comes and hangs out with us. So that's what I want to do. We're not faking it. And Jesus gives us the safety not to. Religious people today, you know, if you bring them to mind, they're probably a lot like those religious people in the Bible. They're keeping up appearances. They're putting on a show about how not that bad they are. And into that place, Jesus brings us the good news. And the good news is that show is canceled. Okay? It's not on TV anymore. It's no longer running. If you get tickets for it, they're fake because the whole thing is fake. And you don't have to do it anymore. Nothing, no thing can change how God feels about us. Nothing we do, nothing we think, nothing we believe, nothing we eat, nothing. We are loved. Our status as loved is permanent. We are loved. You are loved. I am loved. He is loved. She is loved. They are loved. For God so loved the world. Here's another famous verse. The whole world, that he gave his only son. He didn't come to condemn it, but to save it. But because we're working with that sin addiction and we've got this other story, I think it's hard. We have a hard time believing that. There's another story going around that you earn your way into heaven by either doing the right thing or maybe, and this is only a slightly better variant, by thinking the right thing about God. There are lots of variations of this story, but for the purposes of my meditation today and for the next few weeks, I'm just going to call this kind of thinking performance thinking, because it's more than just about God. We think about this in all aspects of our life. We're constantly kind of setting ourselves up for someone's approval and failing at it and feeling bad about it. And it's this cycle that I think that Jesus frees us from it. I know that Jesus frees us from it, but it's hard to access that. So let's work on that some. And Jesus helps us do it in a lot of different ways. So let me tell you a story that Jesus told. The workers in the vineyard. I don't have control of this, David. Can you put up that picture? I think it's a Van Gogh. Right? Anybody know? Is this Van Gogh? It's kind of washed out because it's too sunny in here. That has to be Van Gogh, right? Okay, good. I meant to look that up, but you guys know stuff, so that's good. So here's a story. A guy owns a vineyard. You know what a vineyard is? Some people like to say vineyard because it's full of vines. And that makes more sense. Full of vines where you pick grapes. Grapes are kind of hard to pick. You have to like kind of pluck them all. And so you need a lot of people to pick them. And when it's harvest time, if they go bad or all the birds eat them, it's a problem. And you can't make the wine that's going to make the money to justify this whole enterprise. So this guy goes to the marketplace to try to find some workers at the beginning of the day. And he collects a bunch of people to come and work. But a few hours later, he realizes, oh, wait a second. I need more people. So he goes back to the marketplace. It's the third hour, Jesus says. And that's kind of like, I don't know, what's the third hour? Probably like 9 o'clock or something like that. You know, it's a little bit later. People got started at dawn. Now people are coming in to work at 9 o'clock. Come on, come work. I'll need a lot of workers. I'll pay you what you're due. But then there's still too much stuff. So he goes back again at the sixth hour, like in the middle of the day. And there are people just like kind of hanging around in the marketplace at that point. And those people are like, obviously if you're just hanging around at noon, you're kind of like a bad apple. At least that's the impression. Because the guy's like, what are you doing just hanging around in the middle of the day? get to work. Come work for me. And so he brings them to the vineyard to pick the vines of the grapes too. And but then, you know, and this is the crazy part. At the 11th hour, and that's where this phrase comes from. You've heard people say, at the 11th hour, it's from this story. At the 11th hour, he goes and gets a few more people that are still standing around, and he brings them in to work for like an hour before it gets dark. And then it's time to pay everyone for their due. And the people come up and get paid, and everyone gets paid the same amount, the fair amount for a full day's work. And the people who came in at the 11th hour are like, oh, wow, this is crazy. I only worked an hour and I got all this money. And so they're pretty excited about it. But the people that have worked all day since dawn, they're like, no. And Jesus, not Jesus, but the guy in the parable who's doing the work, or who owns the place, he says, is that, and I like the King James of this, is thine eye evil because I am good? So the last shall be first, and the first last. For many are called, but few chosen. That word evil there gets translated in a lot of different ways. A lot of times, if you know this story, you might have heard it as, are you jealous? Well, of course they're jealous. But it's a little bit more than that. And also, sometimes it gets into, is thine eye jealous because I am generous? They kind of make a lot of sense of it. The translators, because they're translating from this other language, they tidied up so it kind of makes sense. But the whole point of it is that it does not make sense. The point is that there's something that's out of whack with this guy, and he's doing something that is new. So that word that gets translated as evil could also be like, it also gets translated in other parts of the Bible as like, is your eye sick? Is your eye unwhole? Is your eye kind of broken? Do you have a broken eye? Is your eye infected by my goodness, by my generousness? Don't be like that. The last shall be first and the first last. For many are called, but few are chosen. Let that sink in for a minute. The last shall be first and the first last. For many will be called, but few chosen. Let's go to the news now. We'll come back to Jesus in a second. The American dream is in the news this week because the president decided to repeal this old executive order called DACA. Have you heard about DACA? If you've listened to the news at all, everyone's talking about this, but maybe you missed it. Deferred action for childhood arrivals. Here's a potential childhood arrival peering over the border wall in Mexico. This artist made this big installation. That's a Mexican baby looking over into the United States. A potential dreamer would be how the marketing for that might be. The recipients of the deferred action are people who came illegally to the United States as children with their parents who were illegal immigrants. And Obama made this program that allows them to qualify for like government loans so they can go to college, and the promise is that they're not going to get deported, because essentially the idea is, oh, it's not their fault. They came with their parents. But some people think it's their fault, or some people still say the law is the law, and so they need to get out of it. We don't know what Trump is actually going to do with this. He's very surprising. He's much more irrational than that landowner in the story, even. But they're called dreamers, and I don't want to get into the relative merits of the policy. I'm not really interested in that. I'm interested in how we talk about it and the rhetoric about this, because this idea of the dreamers, these kids are dreamers. You know, who doesn't love the American dream, right? The American dream is our country's, it's really the only unifying idea of the United States, is that you can get rich and it's fair, all right? That's the story that we tell about ourselves. And it's all about the pursuit of happiness, and happiness is very narrowly defined as the pursuit of wealth. In fact, most of our assumptions about like how our society works, they fall apart. The system would fall apart if everyone didn't just stop trying to get what they could, trying to get happiness via money. It's this brilliant story, the American dream. I love this quote from this old rabble-rouser from the 20th century, John Steinbeck. And again, I'm not advocating socialism. I'm just interested in some of this language. Socialism never took root in America because the poor see themselves not as exploited proletariat,
but as temporarily embarrassed millionaires.
When I looked this quote up, full disclosure, I discovered that it's disputed as to whether Steinbeck actually said this, but I read all of Steinbeck's books in high school. I was a big Steinbeck fan, and don't say anything bad about him, all right? Proletariat is a fancy word for, I'm just saying, like, working class, a forever working class, a sociological term, I guess. And John Steinbeck wrote a lot of stories about, like, immigrant workers in Southern California. But what I really am interested in is this, it's just too true, temporarily embarrassed millionaires. That's kind of what we're taught all to be. All right, here's another image that goes with it. This is like a piece of training material. Become a rich old coot someday. Oh, this is what a coot is, by the way. Pull that one up there. That's what I had to look up. What is a coot? That's a coot. You could become that someday. No. For some reason, like a crazy old coot is something people say. Has anyone not heard that term, crazy old coot? You crazy old coot? Who hasn't heard that before? I'm exposing you to some culture. I don't know. I had to look at why are coots so crazy? It's because they make a lot of weird noises. They are not ducks, though they do kind of look like ducks. And they make a lot of noise. And when danger happens, they all like clump together real fast. They're kind of like they get real scared real easily, and they work together and they clump together to kind of look like a big group of like one animal or something to confuse predators. That's one thing that's kind of crazy that they do. But the really crazy thing they do, and I would have showed you a video, but I don't have enough time, is when they take off, they're not like ducks that just can kind of like hop out of the water and start flying. They have to like run on the water like this to get going. Like, I don't know, their wings are kind of dumb. That's the kind of coot I aspire to be. Like, yes, I would like to fly and float on the water and have webbed feet. I don't want to be that kind of rich old coot. Exactly, yes. And sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just like, yeah, they fall down or what? I am quite a coot, so careful. And sometimes they'll try to take off and they can't get off and they just stop and they're just like, well, forget about it. I'm just going to float. It's fine. So that kind of irrationalness is the utmost aspiration of ING Direct, where you're supposed to put all your money and become a rich person. This is the kind of propaganda we get. Everything should be fair, but everyone should also be rich. Everyone must be rich. And there's probably enough for everyone to be a crazy old coot. You can see that this kind of falls apart. This message, I think, gives us that evil eye. It's the training. It's that unwhole eye that we're going to look at the world and we're going to say, hey, there's not enough. Hey, that 11th hour person got as much as I did. Start comparing yourself. And then you start performing in order to make sure that you don't become someone who gets played like those people that worked all day and didn't get, you know, you could have just showed up at the 11th hour. You start living your whole life so that you don't get messed up, so that you can make the most with the least amount of time, you know? Because the parable that Jesus tells, let's not over-spiritualize it too quick. You could just look at it as like, this is how the world works. Some people get rich and other people don't. Case in point is like the music industry. Why in the world is Daniel McGowan not already a millionaire? He's a genius. He writes amazing songs. He's going to sing one for you later, and he should be on TV. But the people who are on TV are kind of banal, and they're boring. And so, like, I mean, of course, this is all up to my taste and whatever the mass marketers are going to produce. Whatever the crazy old coots say we should listen to is what we're going to do. But, you know, it doesn't all work out. The way that the economy is set up, it's not fair. It doesn't all happen. And, like, you know, if you have a crazy, or not crazy, not just crazy, a rich crazy old coot for a grandfather, you have a much better chance of being a rich person. That's just obvious. That's how it works. The rich people stay rich and the poor people probably stay poor. But some poor people do not stay poor. And those are the stories we really, really like. The rags to riches. How many movies have been made about people that started poor and they made it to the top? And how many people do you know that started poor and made it to the top? You know, there are many more movies than people you know. Now, granted, the American Dream I don't want to totally poo-poo it, because there is quite a bit of social mobility, and this is a value that America has instilled in its people, is that that's how it should be. It's not. It's not that way universally at all. But we do all believe that it should be that way, and we're always looking for the stories that support this kind of rags-to-riches journey, the person who started at the bottom and made it to the top. And it gets into us. This dream gets into us. It does. It infects our eyes, and we start seeing the world this way. An example from my life is I'm getting to the age now, and I'm not that old. But I am getting to the age where I see young, successful people, and I wistfully, almost jokingly, but not really, say, "What am I doing with my life? You know, I could be Justin Bieber." This nagging sense that we need more stuff is driven into us so much, and it works out in a lot of ways, just in your normal life. Longer hours, fewer vacations, willing to put up with bad treatment because there are bills to pay, credit card bills to pay, which is the ultimate insult because it's money you already spent plus interest, just working off the fun you had last year. Normal people like us can get buried under the American dream. You know, our eyes are constantly getting infected, and it's hard to see Jesus being generous or good. It's hard to imagine a love that we don't have to pay for just because we practice doing something else for most of the time. You know, if we look at how we live our lives, we're really good at living the American dream and not so much at living a life in which we're going to give away all the money at the 11th hour. We're not going to do that. That's crazy. I won't be able to pay the credit card bill if I do that. So how do we stop? How do we get out? How do we get that eye clean and clear so that we can see the world as, you know, this place of God's bounty? It's tough. There's a definite alternative story going against that. And I'm sure we can come up with a lot of reasons, a lot of answers for this. And you can give us some in talkback in a little bit here. And also you can talk about it further in your cells. But I just have one idea as a kind of countermeasure so that we can get our eyes clean, so that we could see Jesus doing something beautiful, see the kingdom of God as this generous, beautiful place where there's enough for the 11th hour full payday, and be like, yes, that is my world. That is my heart. That's where I live. And, you know, there's other things, but that's where, this is what is really who I am. And it's just one thing. It's choose simplicity. It's get a core value that's different than the American dream. Simplicity is a core value, actually, of the Brethren in Christ, which is one of the families of churches that we're connected to. And they wrote it down pretty beautifully. You can put that up there for me, David. They value living simply. We value uncluttered lives, which free us to love boldly, give generously, and serve joyfully. And those are just kind of a basic statement. But it's about how do we make that into a core value for us and not just like a thing that's on a piece of paper. I'm recommending it to you as a choice that dictates a bunch of other choices in your lives. That's what it means to like have a core value. It's like, I'm going to make this decision. I'm going to say, I'm going to live simply, have an uncluttered life, not too much stuff. Because I want to love boldly. I want to give generously and I want to serve joyfully. This is who I want to be. That sounds good to me. What's it going to take to do that? We don't want to see the world and imagine it as a competition. So we need to choose this core value kind of like as an inoculation against that just going to happen reality that we're going to get bombarded by other ideas for who we're going to be. And we need to say, yeah, we're infected. You know, we are trained to say that Jesus is a coot for imagining a kingdom of God like the story he tells. If that's ideal, I don't want to do that. We're trained to say, no, that's coot stuff. So let's instead, Jesus' idea is that we be challenged by that story, not condemned. He's not against us. So let's just accept the challenge. Let's just say, yeah, this is who we are. And we're gonna be something else when we listen to this story and choose something else. Choose simplicity is my suggestion as our response. So, I don't know, some ideas. Don't buy the house at the top of your price range so that you're going to be buried under the mortgage forever. So you have to take the promotion because if you don't, you won't be able to go on vacation. And, you know, it's this whole thing, you know, live within your means and you can figure out how to do that. But it's very basic. It's, like I said, this core value is going to dictate all of our other decisions.
Invest in something other than your savings account, than your ING Direct account, like in the Common Fund and beyond. You know, even the Common Fund that we have a Common Fund among us. A lot of people share into it. And our Common Fund, one of our proverbs says, we share 20% from our Common Fund beyond our immediate needs. So we're even modeling together, and you're participating in something when you participate in the Common Fund. Like that's like a surefire way to do it, because you get to join up with other people, and together we're doing big stuff. Like this week, the leadership team decided to share more than $10,000 with the Yemeni people. You know about Yemen, where there's a civil war and a famine because of it. We are writing a check as we speak. I don't think Nate actually wrote it yet, but to the International Rescue Committee with money that we saved together last year to share for something like this. You can get in on that. You can watch your 11 hours of work go to something way bigger than yourself. But you can also, you know, take it to like small stuff too. It doesn't have to be just big. You know, you can figure out how to have fun without spending a ton of money. Develop some hobbies that don't cost anything. Develop some tastes that are not expensive, you know? You don't have to drink the very best pour over coffee only. You could decide that I like the very best pour over coffee that costs like $3 or $4 per pop, but I also like Folgers because I want to. That's the kind of like really small stuff. You could develop even your tongue to say, no, I like that. Or you could just check out of coffee altogether and drink water and eat an apple. I don't do that. I love coffee. You can get into, how am I going to make the grocery bill work? You know, how am I going to bring this down? Our friends in the Mennonites, we're connected to them through our religious faith family, and they even write like cookbooks that help you get the most out of your money. The More with Less cookbook, which I have in my backpack over there. I was going to have it as a little show, but I forgot to bring it out. It's like the best thing you can eat for your money, for protein, lentils. They figured this out. You know, they did the science. It's like dollars per pound, the best thing for protein is lentils. You know, so I don't eat lentils that often. But if I were really serious about this being simple thing, which these people that wrote this cookbook are, they're trying to scrimp everything they can so they could give like 50% of their income to people in Yemen. You know, there are people in this world that are that kind of into simplicity. And that's the one other danger that I have to share with you today. You could adopt this core value and become a Pharisee or a religious person about your core value. You know, you could take this too far. You could be like, oh, you use gasoline? I only use vegetable oil in my car, and anyone who doesn't is against the Lord. You know, like you could get that kind of crazy. But don't do that. You know, do the best you can. Talk about it. Choose this value. It's an opportunity to you. It's like, let's be simple as a way to get our eyes whole, clean, generous, to look at that 11th hour person and say, yes, the system didn't work the way it was supposed to, and I don't like that. I want everyone to have enough. I want there to be this amazing surprise occasionally. And I want to build that kind of beautiful surprise into my life on the regular. I think that's what we do when we kind of bow out of this show. Nah, I'm not going to perform that way. I'm not going to do it exactly the way the American dream is going to teach me to do it. I'm going to do something else because I aspire to something much better than being a rich old coot. I aspire to have the freedom to do, you know, weird things together, like worship God and be a peculiar people in the world that is doing something fantastic that the world needs. I build my life around that, and I build it with them, and we figure it out together. That's what we're doing here, and I think that simplicity is something we can choose together. And again, it's just a recommendation, and we can figure out a lot more of what that means, and there's even other solutions too.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.